Okay, we're going to get started now. The House of Government Operations and Elections Committee is now in order, and not in order yet, but while we're waiting for a quorum, we will have our first presenter for House File 1470. Our first presenter is Representative Smith, and while you're coming, I'm going to make a move that House File, okay, sorry. We're going to wait till we have the quorum to move it, but I will allow you to start presenting.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 1470 is the Secretary of State technical bill. It deals with a variety of laws governing business fees and filings. And I have a testifier, Mr. Bert Black, from the Secretary of State's office.
Will you please state your name for the record? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bert Black. I'm the legal advisor to the Office of the Secretary of State. And this is our annual administrative bill from the business services side. As you may know, we in the Secretary of State's office register business entities, take uniform commercial code filings, tax lien filings, and various other business-oriented filings. And that's about two-thirds of the staff are involved in those efforts. And so we have a bill before you today. We come every year. Every year we collect suggestions from our stakeholders as well as our staff in order to streamline the filing process. We have a bill here today that addresses four basic goals in seven sections. We're going to deal with tax liens from the federal government, reinstatements by non-Minnesota corporations, public benefit corporation cleanup from a bill that was passed last year, and then finally a cleanup on central notification system, which is for farm liens. And I can step you through the bill. Section 1 deals with federal tax liens. Right now we get federal tax liens electronically. We've gotten them electronically for about 20 years. The law currently says it's $15 fee for the first two names and then an additional $15 for each debtor name after the first two. It would cost a lot of money to program our computing system to take care of the additional names. Last year we got 21 additional names. That's $315 in revenue. As against, it would be several, actually scores of, yes.
Mr. Beck, could I just pause for 1 second? We do now have a quorum. So, Representative Tice, could you move the minutes for March 20th, please?
I would love to move the minutes for March 20th.
Thank you. And any discussion? Seeing none, the minutes for March 20th are we all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes for March 20th are approved. As well, I can now formally move House File 1470 will be referred to civil law.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Black, I'm sorry for the interruption, but please continue.
No problem. Business must be taken care of. The federal tax liens, we got 21 additional names. That's $315 in revenue for the year. If we had been able to collect it, which our computers are not set up to do that, it would be scores of thousands of dollars to do the programming. So this conforms, the Section 1 conforms the law to reality, which is that it's simply more economic to charge a flat fee. Similarly, in Section 2, we have non-Minnesota corporations. They're referred to as foreign corporations. That includes Iowa and the Dakotas and Wisconsin. When a foreign corporation wants to do business in Minnesota, it has to register with our office for authority to do business. They're supposed to file an annual renewal every year. Sometimes they don't, in which case their authority is revoked. When their authority is revoked, if they later want to come back and do business in Minnesota, they have to file a reinstatement and pay the missing annual renewals, which for foreign organizations do have fees. Well, as it turns out, some of them send one, two, three, four annual renewals. And, of course, there are varying levels of fee with each of those. It's a base fee of $250 plus $115 per annual renewal. This is something, again, the computer cannot easily discern, and so we are proposing a flat fee. We've worked it out so that the flat fee will produce approximately the same revenue as is currently produced under the current fee schedule. That's more a question for, I suppose, for later on down the line when we get to Representative Anderson's committee. But suffice it to say that a flat fee is much easier for the computer to deal with. Sections 3 through 6 deal with public benefit corporations, which were passed last year. The first two sections change the reference to when the annual report of those organizations would be due. Instead of being 90 days, it's before April 1st. And the reason that we do that is because of leap year. The day changes in the leap year. 90 days after the beginning of the year is a different day during leap years. Well, not only don't the computers like that, but it's confusing to individuals as well. So we just want to say, basically, get it in before April 1st. That's an easier way to deal with this question. So that's sections 3 and 4. Section 5 indicates that this is a consumer protection issue in the sense of a public benefit corporation has, when it forms, it puts in its name public benefit corporation. Well, if you're going to have your public benefit corporation status revoked because you didn't file the annual renewal, you shouldn't have public benefit corporation in your name anymore because it does connote some things that are different from the regular business corporation in which you're not entitled to say about yourself if you don't keep your status up. And so they're going to have to change their name to just a regular corporate name in Section 5. And then in Section 6, if they don't do that, their corporate duration will expire. I'm hopeful that the people who, we don't have a lot of public benefit corporations yet. I think we're probably still under 30 of those yet. They just came in on January 1st of this year. And I'm hoping that they won't get behind on their paperwork, but they really shouldn't be allowed to trade on that if they're not a public benefit corporation anymore. Finally, in Section 7, this is relating to central notification system for farm liens. Farm liens are a little different from UCC in the sense that under the UCC there's a first-in-time priority. And that's not the case for CNS farm liens. And these farm liens are something that go back to the 1985 Federal Farm Bill and Senator Boschwitz, who produced this or came up with this as a solution to a portion of the farm crisis of the 1980s. Well, so this is all really kind of old. This law was passed in particularly in 1991, I think it was. And we've been doing these for the intervening time. But in 1991, there was no internet. And people used phones a lot more. And you'll see that it talks in line 3, I think it's 3.22, it talks about oral search inquiries. It references oral and written search inquiries. We've talked to the stakeholders. Everybody agrees that, number one, the internet exists now and that we can use it more easily for these online searches, and number two, that it produces a record of what you searched for. And that's the problem with a phone conversation. You don't necessarily have a documented record of what it was that was searched for. So, for example, if somebody is searching for Bert Black, but instead they say Bob Black on the phone, or if it's misunderstood over the phone that way, and they say, no, we have nothing on file, well, what was really asked for? And so everybody's agreed that, no, we need to have some more documentation on these. And so instead of saying oral, we simply say online. And then finally, the other change is that the Secretary of State is the only place that gets CNS filings. So instead of putting filing office, we just put in Secretary of State, since that's what it is. We don't need any secret code. It's better to use plain language to tell the people reading this where they should file. Anyway, Madam Chair and members, this is the bill. It's we believe that it's ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Representative Smith, are there any questions from our members? Are there any other testifiers who wish to speak to the bill from the audience? Seeing none, I will renew the... first of all, I'd like to give you, Representative Smith, the final word. Closing remarks for House Bill 1470.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This bill is non-controversial, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. All right, so seeing no questions and other testifiers, I will renew the motion that House File 1470 move on to civil law. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, House File 1470 is referred to civil law. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
next on the list is Representative Gunther for House File 744. And as Representative Gunther moves down, I will make a motion that House File 744 pass on to State Government Finance. And just a reminder that we are dealing with the rulemaking portion of House File 744. So with that, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. This bill attests sections the Board of Accountancy bill revises the definitions, attest to make Minnesota statutes consistent with national standards. Excluding Section 10, changes to other sections are the result of the revised attest language in Section 1 to ensure the consistency throughout the statute. Section 10, violation penalties, costs of proceedings, raises the civil penalty amount from $2,000 to $5,000. This is not a new penalty or new enforcement. It is only a change in the amount. The board already has the authority to enforce and to assess penalties. And with that, if I'll certainly be open to any questions. We have Mike Vesic to answer all the questions.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. Mr. Vekic, can you state your name for the record and then give your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michael Vekic. I'm a member of the State Board of Accountancy. I'm a past chair, and I presently chair the Complaint Committee. Thank you, members, for opportunity. Representative Gunther has pretty well laid out the revision to these bills, or to this bill, I should say. One is a clarification of the attest function, which is already in law. This does not broaden the attest function. It just clarifies it to the Uniform Accountancy Law, which Minnesota adopted about 15 years ago. In addition to that, this is a work that's now done by the National Association of State Boards and the American Institute of CPAs. And as it relates to the civil penalty, again, this does not change the board authority. It doesn't change the board's enforcement. It only increases the amount from $2,000 to $5,000 per infraction. We haven't had a change, as I indicated, in 30 years. We've seen an increase in the number of violations in the profession, number one. And number two, this is an additional deterrent that we believe as a board is necessary. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. We do have one member question. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this on the civil penalty, it's not to exceed $5,000. Do you normally assess the full $5,000, or does that you vary that depending on the violation? And so it's discretionary. It doesn't mean we're all suddenly going to get $3,000 extra money every time we have a violation.
Mr. Vekic.
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, that is correct. It is based on the severity, but not automatically going to the maximum.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Vekic, with regard to the new violation penalty, What conversation have you had then with the CPA Society? How are their members, you know, looking at this?
Mr. Vekic.
Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck, we've had consultation with the State Society of CPAs as well as the Minnesota Association of Public Accountants, and they both are in, I wouldn't use the word in favor of, but are not objecting to.
Representative Runbeck.
Madam Chair, Mr. Vekic, just any numbers on sort of the volume of violations that you process each year?
Mr. Vekic.
Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck, we run generally about 200 to 250 different violations per year. They can run from those that would actually be egregious to those that may have not filed on time, may not have all their credits in for certified for certification. But generally, the egregious ones would run around 50 to 60 per year.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Are there any other member questions? Are there any members of the audience that would like to testify to the bill? Seeing none, before I renew the motion, I will allow Representative Gunther to have the last say on his bill.
Very seldom does the Board of Accountancy come before the legislature, and this is something that's well overdue, and I think it's time to tighten up and make sure people do the right things that are in the profession.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 744 be referred to State Government Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is passed. House File 744 will go to State Government Finance. The next that we have here is Representative Christensen. If you can come down, and while you're making your way, I'm going to make a motion that House File 1725 be referred to civil law.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, over here. To your left. Good morning, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to welcome Representative Christensen to the committee, but I noticed that there's something missing, and perhaps that took on the form of a snack.
Representative Christensen, would this be your first time bringing a bill before this committee?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, it is my first bill before this committee, but not my first bill.
Madam Chair, point of clarification, not to belabor the point, but as I was instructed, and I believe Representative Nelson could corroborate for me, it is the standing tradition of this committee and all committees, I believe, that when you present your first bill there to that committee, you bring snacks. And I only bring this up because I'm sort of peckish.
Madam Chair, in the absence of Representative Albright, I will take the lad under my wing and make sure that this doesn't happen again.
And Madam Chair and Representative Christensen, if you want your bill to come to civil law, don't come empty-handed. Don't come empty-handed.
Representative Christensen, one more. Representative Tice.
Well, Madam Chair, I think I was not sure I had seen Representative Smith here before either, and I did not see any treats.
Oh.
So perhaps, you know, just for the notes, we should have this in here that two freshmen came with no treats.
Representative Christensen, you've been warned. And you can also pass this friendly warning on to your colleague, Representative Smith, as you both will be going before civil law. So with that, I will allow you to present your bill, House File 1725.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1725 allows a different delivery system, essentially, for filing unnecessary notices with the Office of Administrative Hearings. And I have a representative from the Office of Administrative Hearings today to talk a little bit more about that.
Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tammy Poost, and I'm the Chief Judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. And House File 1725 is just a one-sentence addition that allows us to move out of the 70s and into this millennium, which would allow us to accept electronic filing as opposed to the law right now requires filing by mail or by personal delivery or by fax machine. When it's fiscally neutral, we're not trying to build another system. It's just to allow us to have attachments to emails.
Are there any questions from members? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Pust, why did it take so long to do this? I mean, I think this goal, that's, I think we're not moving out of the 70s. I think maybe the 50s or the 30s, I think. So what took so long?
Well, I've only been here, Madam Chair and members, for about 18 months. This is the first session I've brought legislation before you, so just trying to clean things up.
Representative Nelson? Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. In consultation with House Research, perhaps in the future, if this bill goes forward, Representative Christensen could file his snacks electronically with the committee. And again, I want to thank House Research. They are always on top of these kinds of things for us. So,
comment to that, Ms. Representative Christensen. are there any other questions from members? Is there anybody from the audience willing to testify on this bill? seeing none, Representative Christensen, would you like to have the final word on 1725?
Madam Chair, members, I have to say, I think this is the most snack-oriented committee I've been in front of so far, and that's surprising given that Representative Erdahl does not serve on this committee. it's a good bill. I think it brings us into the 21st century, and you could argue it brings us into the 90s. I think it's a good bill. I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Is there any final discussion? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 1725 be referred to civil law. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes. House File 1725 will go on to civil law. And thank you. With that, I will. Our next presenter is Representative Franson. And as Representative Franson makes her way down, we have House File 683. I'm going to make a motion that it is referred to civil law. But before we get there, it looks like we have two author's amendments. So.
Waiting for my hemp BFF, Phyllis Representative Kahn, to come and help me.
Representative Franson, would you like to, I'll let you choose which amendment you would like to move first to get the bill in the shape that the author would like it.
We, Madam Chair, would like to move the A3 amendment.
Okay. Thank you. So could you, Representative Scott moves the A3. Could you, do you want to tell us a little bit about the A3?
The A3 addresses some issues that the BCA had. So we took their concerns and fixed it.
Okay. Are there any questions from members regarding the A3 amendment? Any discussion? All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A3 amendment is adopted and gets the bill in the shape. The author, are you moving the A2 as well? Or
no, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay. With that, I will allow Representative Franson to talk about HF 683 in the rulemaking portion.
House File 683, coined as the Industrial Hemp Development Act. The 2014 Farm Bill contained a provision known as Section 7606, which is in your packets. This provision exempts industrial hemp from the Controlled Substance Act and permits state agricultural departments and institutions of higher education to participate in industrial hemp research pilot projects under certain conditions. It further defines industrial hemp as containing no more than 0.3% THC content, a trace amount. House File 683 meets those federal conditions. 21 states currently have laws that meet the requirements of Section 7606. California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Maine, Montana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New York, North Dakota, Oregon, South Carolina, Tennessee, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and West Virginia. While awaiting another governor's signature in New Mexico, industrial hemp is not marijuana. It contains, by definition, insignificant amounts of THC. It primarily stocks includes materials derived from seeds and materials derived from stocks. House File 683 establishes a regulatory framework for an industrial hemp pilot project in Minnesota. Of concern to this committee are the rulemaking sections of the bill, specifically Section 21, Subdivision 3, and Section 25. Section 21, Subdivision 3, grants the commissioner rulemaking authority for the establishment of the pilot project consistent with Public Law 113-79, the 2014 Farm Bill. Section 25 only becomes effective upon congressional action to authorize full commercial-scale hemp production. Bills have been filed in Congress to do just that. With this bill, we can establish a small-scale incubator for an emerging agricultural and manufacturing industry that will benefit farmers, manufacturers, and consumers. Hemp is one of the most useful plants in all the world. Its applications are staggering. With additional research conducted by our esteemed researchers at Minnesota, the colleges, we could discover many new applications for industrial hemp. Some of the new cutting applications include hempcrete, concrete made out of hemp material, and hemp insulation for building construction, airplane and automobile bodies made from hemp, supercomputers and electric car batteries applications, plastics, and many, many more. Recent data indicates that the U.S. market for hemp is $620 million a year. That's a 20% increase over the prior year. The largest growth sector is in seed applications due to the healthful property of hemp seeds, which some of you may have passed. We got some goodies passing around all out of hemp, and one of those is the seeds. So the seeds are integrated into many food products. A good source of protein, enriched in omega-3 fatty acids and minerals, it's good for humans and livestock. Hemp seeds can also be turned into biofuels and paint additives, and increasingly in personal care products. And you do see some soap being passed around and some lotion as well. Hemp seeds are also a great substitute for those with peanut allergies. So what we are talking about is giving farmers another crop to grow, researchers access to study the plant without federal interference, processors the ability to employ people to turn raw materials into products, and consumers a choice in their food and product purchasing decisions. And most importantly, members, this is a jobs bill. The information we can gather from this pilot project will help establish Minnesota as a leader in emerging industrial hemp economy. We were during World War II, and we certainly can be again. And with that, Representative Kahn, do you have anything to add?
Representative Kahn.
Yes, Madam Chairman and members, well, Representative Franson did such a super job, there's hardly anything to add, except I want to emphasize her last statement about the history of industrial hemp in Minnesota. We had a long tradition of doing it, and if anyone goes along the roads and trails in southeastern Minnesota, you'll find remnants of that industry sprouting up at all times. One of the points I would like to make, first of all, let me say this bill, which I helped draft, is modeled after Kentucky's law, which has really pushed Kentucky ahead in the hemp production, hemp growth industry. And in case you think this is some kind of, you know, I know it's suspicious whenever I get up here. In case you think this is some kind of liberal plot, the Kentucky bill was pushed very heavily by Mitch McConnell, He was a very strong supporter and is a very strong supporter supporter in the Congress. One of the questions that gets asked, and I feel very competent to answer this as a geneticist, is, you know, well, isn't there going to be a problem? You'll hide the good stuff and the bad stuff. Well, one of the problems is the genetics of intergenetics of hemp means that both crops essentially are ruined. And when Colorado did their legalization of the real stuff, one of the first things that happened was apparently $1 million crop. I think they're now totally inside now. But $1 million outdoor crop was totally ruined because it was growing in too close proximity to a field of industrial hemp. You also, in ask of enforcement, all you have to do is ask your colleagues, enforcement people could just ask their colleagues in Canada, who will tell you that their enforcement became very, very much easier once industrial hemp became prevalent.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, to Representative Kahn's comment about we make it suspicious when she's here, I do not get suspicious when she appears by herself, nor do I get suspicious when Representative Franson appears by herself. And we have bipartisan concern when Representatives Franson and Kahn both appear before the committee, seeming to be in line with the particular bill. Members, pay very, very close attention.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, isn't that one of the seven signs of the apocalypse?
I believe Representative Kahn heard on the campaign trail that she needed to work with the Republicans. So.
Do you care to reply to that, Representative Kahn?
This is a very, you know, in the last session, I think the authors were just reversed. We had the same... Yep. Fill in, but we didn't. And I think the person who really facilitated moving forward on this with an amendment in environment, finance, whatever it is, was Representative Hamilton, who's a very strong supporter of this, too.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is a fairly auspicious moment in the history of capital politics. And so with that, if you'll indulge me.
Madam Chair, the last time that Representative Kahn partnered when we were the majority, the person she partnered with became party chair. So Representative France, I don't know if you're on a track for that or not.
Thank you.
We have a question from Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. This will not be a snack-oriented question. So in World War I, World War II, hemp was used heavily for cordage. What happened to make that go away, and will some of this be used for cordage? Because I know that with as much barge traffic as we have, it might be nice for Minnesota water traffic to use Minnesota rope.
Representative Kahn or Representative Franson?
In your packet, you have a nice little map to let you know exactly the useful ways you can use industrial hemp. Does that answer your question?
Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, yes, it mostly does. I was mostly serving you a meat pitch. Giving you an opportunity to further wow us with what hemp can do.
Oh, well.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, my apologies. I've been a little distracted this year with things going on, but I have often, for the committees, made hemp seed covered chocolate truffles. And I apologize for not. But session ending at midnight and getting home at 1 was a little against that.
Representative Kahn, you can deliver them to this committee any day. Representative Franson.
Madam Chair, into Representative Nash's comments about wanting to be wowed, one of the cars, was it a BMW that is now being made out of Mercedes-Benz, yes, that is being made out of hemp.
No, it's the interior cover panel on the front passenger doors.
Which is still being made out of hemp. the crop in Colorado, one company bought it for hempcrete. And so as soon as these crops are going in, businesses are are wanting to get a piece of the action. In Alexandria, we've got a company called Synopta, and they too are, I haven't quite found out what they're using hemp for, but right in my district, Synopta deals with organics and are taking a piece of the action as well. But because we cannot grow hemp in Minnesota, we have got to import hemp either from Canada or from China to do everything that we possibly want to do here in the United States. The differences between Canada and China is that Minnesota can't grow it ourselves. Plus then, so then that raises the cost of goods if people want to actually, if companies want to manufacture the stocks here in Minnesota.
Representative Nash, any further question?
Nothing further.
Representative Franson, do we have some other testifiers to the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, we do.
If you want to call them down.
We have Tom Peterson from the Farmers Union.
Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union. We strongly support this legislation. I've been working on it for many years. One of the things that we've passed this bill bipartisanly in the House or similar versions of it over the years, but one of the big game changers in this bill was the 2014 Farm Bill authorized language for the first time that allows this to go forward. And that's why we're seeing states rush to pass this. And we see North Dakota, New Mexico passed by overwhelming margins in their legislatures just this past week. Missouri, Alaska are all moving forward just this week passing this legislation. And again, it's because of the Farm Bill for the first time. And that is something to consider as we're moving forward with this bill. In this committee, what you're looking at is the rulemaking. But I just want to say there's always been a lot of support. This legislation, if it's passed, it would open some different types of markets as we see it develop. And keep in mind, our farmers, we have a lot of farmers in Northwest Minnesota. I don't know who the most Northwestern member on this committee is, like Senator Representative Fabian. You'll see it grown right over the border in Manitoba. And our farmers know it's grown there, and they've increased their acreage consistently over the years. They grow it, and they process it, and they sell it here in the United States, and we buy their stuff. But we don't grow it. So, Madam Chair, I just want to encourage you that, a lot of the things, too, have gotten easier to grow it, to harvest it. But there's a lot of challenges, and that's why the rulemaking is important. A lot of the things could be worked out. The pilot project's important because we'd be looking at the soils, the seed, things that are available, and then some of the different ways we could move it and transport it. Some of the concerns I think you'll see the law enforcement has. Also looking into Manitoba and their, because we've heard concerns from law enforcement that Kentucky, when they passed it, they're about a year ahead of us on this. And looking at Manitoba, the head of the enforcement there, they've said they've inspected 95% of the fields. They have never found marijuana growing in the field. As you heard the representative say, it just doesn't work, but they've never found it. And I think that's really important. They've inspected 95% of their fields. So thank you. I urge your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. We do have a few member questions. First, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Peterson, when the state is in full production, do you have any estimate of the potential harvest? And I mean, is it harvested in bushels, measured in bushels?
Mr. Peterson.
It, Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, in Canada, it's been legal since, I think, 1998. They've been growing it since about 2000. And they've grown anywhere from 5,000 acres to 70,000 acres last year. And so that's not a tremendous amount. To put that into perspective, I'm trying to think of maybe in some counties we grow 100, 200,000 acres of corn just in one county. So it's not going to take over. How it kind of goes in Canada is it develops, either people grow it and they niche market it and they make their own products, or they work with a company like Sunopta, who they were saying, and they would grow out from Alexandria because they don't want to have a farmer in Washington County growing it and a farmer in Pine County growing it and then the plants farther away. So it kind of grows around that, they've seen in other countries. And so I think that is somewhere in there that we would be having. There's really two different products. There's, as Representative Nash said, there's the cordage or the stock, and then there's the seed. The seed is what's really kind of taken off in years. When we harvested it in World War II, a lot of it was for the cordage, and now we're seeing a lot of it done for the seed. And I think that's really so. There's a lot of different oils are a big piece of hemp as well. So,
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peterson, you alluded to the fact that this is probably a proprietary product with a very flat management structure where the people that are growing it are going to be using it in various products that they... But could you ever foresee the time when there would be a market, say, on the Chicago Grain Exchange, or is that more of a dream versus a reality?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I think that's it's probably a little ways away yet, but just giving the acreage and but I do see it and we see it growing a lot, like all the different products, and so Canada, they're looking at animal feed, animal bedding. The concrete is a big user of it, or the hempcrete, and so some of those uses are just expanding. And so if it were to become a big volume, maybe it would be traded that way, but I'd say we'd be quite a ways away from that. But
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, Sunopta is an organization of a global nature that's also involved in the production and the technologies for ethanol production. And I'm just curious in terms of looking at your graph here, and I don't recognize that as one of the attributes for this. Is that just because you're using it in other variety ways and this is of a lesser consideration, or is that something that Sunopta is also considering?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright. Actually, from what the background I've looked at is with the oil there, it's better suited for biodiesel, and they're looking at biodiesel production more with it than ethanol. But a lot of the technologies that are being worked on are, I think are going to be eventually able to convert that also to a ethanol. But most of it is focused right now on a biodiesel type oil product.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Albright. Okay. I believe we have another testifier. Is that correct? Thank you. Please state your name.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your record, I'm Doug Busselman. I'm with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. And we are also here today to speak in support of this bill. I think that while we down the road would look at the opportunities that this type of a agricultural crop could have, I think our focus still is on the bill as it currently is written, which focuses on research and the ability for our researchers to do the work that they need to do in developing the infrastructure and the background information that we need to have in order to move forward if and when the products become more legal. And so we support the research and development activities that are in this bill, as well as eventually as we move forward the opportunity to participate in production.
Thank you, Mr. Busselman. Are there any member questions? And I will reiterate that we are focusing on the rulemaking portion of House File 683. Is there anybody else from the audience that would wish to testify? Hi. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. While I was out flooring a friend, I was designated the sacrificial lamb to come down and voice our concerns on behalf of law enforcement in the state of Minnesota with regards to this particular product. We find ourselves in a difficult position because as sheriffs, we obviously patrol and control the law enforcement activities of the rural portion of their state where this is going to be grown. We want to try to be as farmer-friendly as we possibly can. But you have to be aware of the law enforcement concerns in this product going down a new road. One of the problems is we don't know what we don't know because we have smart kids that do dumb stuff with product that we don't even know what they're going to do yet. We've seen that with meth production and other kinds of drugs. Innovative, I wish they'd put it to good use. Maybe they'll invent biodiesel or whatever, and this will become a very viable product that we all can use. But we're remiss if we don't at least share some of our law enforcement concerns. Research is one thing. Production, as you're headed into, is another issue. We already understand how this is baled. Also understand how you can break bales apart and hide marijuana inside hemp bales that are being transported. In the regulation, rulemaking, licensing of transporters versus licensing of research facilities, we think is an important part that needs to be worked on, talked about. So as we go through this process, we want to make sure that law enforcement is a part of this discussion. Up to this point, the Department of Ag has pretty well excluded us from this topic and discussion. At some point in time, we would prefer to be a part of potential solution as opposed to the obstacle that we would be viewed at in this particular point in time. So with that, I just want to make sure that you understand our concerns of the road that we're going down with law enforcement, and we're concerned about the number of cases that we get that we may end up submitting to the BCA for testing, which may affect costs, et cetera, that way. So we're concerned about those things. With that, I'll conclude.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Franklin? Is
that? Yes, ma'am.
I do have a member question, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is more for the author of the bill, but it, and I think Mr. Franklin touched on it. This is going to go, and so, which is why it's here, and we've been kind of on the rumble strips, the whole committee on this, but this goes through the full, long rulemaking process. And as Mr. Franklin stated, I hope he helps participate in that process to make sure the rules get put in place so that law enforcement has the ability to do what they need to do.
Thank you. Mr. Franklin,
thank you. Comments? We'd okay. like to participate because we want to be, again, part of the solution as opposed to the obstacle.
Are there any other member questions? Are there any other members of the audience that wish to testify? Seeing none, I will allow Representative Franson to have the final words on House File 683 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for allowing Representative Kahn and I to present House File 683. We thank the Sheriff's Association for voicing some of their concerns today, so I look forward to working with them on addressing their issues. But it is a good bill, lots of potential, and I would like your support. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I move that House File 683, as amended, be referred to civil law. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House File 683 passes and will be referred to civil law. Final on the list is Representative Nelson for House File 1826. And Representative Nelson, since you are a member of this committee, I will allow you to move your own bill here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll move that House File 1826 be referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you. Representative Nelson, please discuss House File 1826.
And Madam Chair, I have this is an administration bill that was brought to me, and I'll have Matt Scheer here from the Governor's Office, Department of Administration, to explain the bill. It's basically a technical bill, and I'll let him describe what it does.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Matt Scheer. I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Administration. And House File 1826 comes about in the purpose of it is to eliminate confusion over the oversight and clarifying the role of the Office of Grants Management. Admin's Office of Grants Management establishes statewide policies for non-capital grants, and the authority is established in 16B.97 and 16B.98. When the statute was written, it came about as a result of an Office of Legislative Auditor report on the state grant-making process to non-capital grants, and the statute was never intended to include capital grants. So what this bill attempts to achieve is to ensure that capital grants are exempt from the Office of Grants Management statutes, and from that perspective, those grants are which are run through the bonding bill are clear. The authority for those is clearly delineated in 16A, which is administered by the Office of Minnesota Management and Budget. And this clarification will provide clear guidance for both grant recipients and grant administering agencies. If members do have any questions, I have folks here for technical questions from the Office of Grants Management as well as from Minnesota Management and Budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any member questions? Oh, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, real quick. So right now, a city or a local unit of government submits a grant proposal. They go through Department of Admin or MMB and then also present it to the legislature, and it would just be through the bonding process then at the legislative process instead of through the Department of Admin? I'm just trying to understand it real quick. Sure.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Joachim, what this bill attempts to clarify is that if it's a non-capital grant, so if it's a grant that an agency is administering, that they would follow our Office of Grants Management policies. If it was a capital grant that went through a bonding bill, that is governed by MMB statutes in 16A. So it just makes a very clear delineation that both of the statutes inform one another and that the processes are for one type of grant and then another type of grant. Thank
you. Representative Joachim?
Thank you.
Any other member questions? Is there anybody from the audience wishing to testify to the bill? Seeing no questions and no other testifiers, Representative Nelson, you want to have the final say and renew your motion?
Madam Chair and members, it's a good bill. It's clarifying existing law so that it eliminates confusion for the public. And so I renew my motion that House Bill 1826 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee.
Thank you. So Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 1826 be referred to State Government Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And with that, members, I think we can adjourn. So thank you.